Want to try a free sample of berry pie?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, can something this small really throw my body off balance?
Time to consult the online experts.
One bite will destroy your metabolism. Drink butter coffee instead to kill cravings.
What? Is it really that bad? I had protein this morning, right? Ugh, but it looks so good.
Only eat after walking 10,000 steps.
Pie is only 2 steps from here. Am I overthinking again? Oh, the kids would really love this.
Fruit ruins insulin sensitivity.
Never eat after 7 p.m.
One cheat day.
Cut carbs. Fast for 48 hours.
Stop it!
They don't know your body. Only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads. No fear, just your signal. Cygnos.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
In hip-hop, loyalty isn't just a word, it's the code. But when fame rises and the stakes get higher, that code starts to crack.
In hip-hop, it's so hard to stay loyal, bro. It really is.
Brothers turn into rivals, friends become threats, and the ones you trusted the most, they're the ones who hurt you when you least expect it. But what we're talking about aren't just regular hip-hop beefs, they're betrayals, the kind that tore movements apart and changed hip-hop forever. Because before rappers filled arenas, topped the charts, and the genre became a billion-dollar industry, there was a group of artists called N.W.A. And they weren't just rappers, they were a revolution. In 1988, Straight Outta Compton exploded onto the scene. It gave America a raw look into life of South Central Los Angeles. Police brutality, poverty, systematic racism, gang violence, they didn't sugarcoat anything. Songs like F the Police didn't just spark outrage, they caught the attention of the FBI, who sent NWA a warning letter.
You know, because everybody's putting us down for doing the song, the FBI was sending us letters, and, you know, police was harassing us. Oh, so you the ones that did the song, F the Police. I ought to beat you a little, you know, stuff like that.
Radio stations banned it, stores refused to stock it, but the fans listened. Despite receiving almost no radio play, Straight Outta Compton went double platinum and it made NWA icons. But behind all of this success and controversy, something was already falling apart, and it was about to change the group forever. At the center of everything was a businessman named Jerry Heller, and right beside him, Eazy-E. Eric wasn't just the face of NWA, he was the founder of Ruthless Records, NWA's label. And Jerry Heller, he was the man making all of the deals, contracts, percentages, publishing rights, everything ran through them. And that's exactly where the problem began. Ice Cube, who was the group's lead writer, started noticing the numbers didn't add up. The group was selling out shows, albums were going platinum, but Cube's wallet didn't reflect the success. Months ended up passing after Straight Outta Compton dropped, and still, there was no paperwork given out. Cube kept asking questions and got no answers. But when he finally got the contract, things would end up changing. According to Cube himself, the contract heavily favored Eazy-E and Jerry Heller.
Is that the great Jerry Heller had his hands in everybody's pockets, so to speak. Is that somewhat of your recollection of what was going on with that relationship?
Yeah, I think it was totally his influence on the group.
But for Cube, there were no publishing rights, no writing royalties, just a flat fee structure that barely scratched the surface of what he'd earned through his lyrics and his vision. He saw it as a complete slap in the face, especially coming from Eazy, someone he considered a peer and a friend.
A little mad at E because I felt E wasn't.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
taking the right side. You know, I felt E.
He was kind of under his.
Doing enough to keep me in the group. You know, it was right. Kind of like, yo, this is how it is. Yo, you can live with it or you can get out the group like Arabian Prince, you know.
Cube ended up refusing to sign and walked away with $75,000 on the table.
And, you know, they clown me when I didn't sign that contract, man.
Do you know $75,000 back then was like $700,000?
Oh, yeah.
Why didn't you want to do that?
I knew they owed me more.
More.
I knew they owed me more. Mm-hmm. I knew if I took that, then I was accepting that I wasn't paid more, that this was cool. And I was like, this ain't cool.
But he wasn't just leaving the group. He was leaving a system that was exploiting him. And when he left, he didn't go quietly. Ice Cube's song No Vaseline hit hard and is now known as a historic diss track towards Eazy-E, Jerry Heller, and the rest of the crew. White man just pulling. The niggas with attitudes, who you fooling? It wasn't just about money, it was personal, and more importantly to Cube, it was the truth. Jerry Heller later defended himself by saying that he didn't take advantage of anyone.
You said, if I stole from these guys, why didn't they never sue me?
Well, I think that's a really good point.
That's pretty fair. No. That's pretty fair to
right.
say.
Nobody ever sued, so obviously they were just using it as an excuse in Compton or wherever to say, you know, we got rid of the white guy, you know, helping Eazy steal or whatever.
But it didn't matter. Cube wasn't the only one waking up. Dr. Dre was up next. Dre had crafted the sound of N.W.A., the beats, the attitude, the feel. But once again, the money wasn't matching the music. Dre wanted out, and with Shug Knight in his corner, he ended up getting it. Shug reportedly used intimidation to free Dre from his contract, and just like that, Dre was a free man. To this day, some blame Jerry Heller, and others say Eazy should have done more to protect the crew, but what's certain is, it ended up costing them everything. In 1995, Eazy-E was diagnosed with AIDS, and sadly passed away just a month later.
I see Eazy, right before he died, Eazy walks up, like, yo, what's happening? We end up talking for like 2 hours, just crazy. Talking about, because he was feuding with Dre and Death Row by then, so my little feud was like, he was talking about, yo, let's get the group back together, you think you could do it? I was like, yo, you work it out with Dre, come holler at me, you know what I mean? And it didn't happen, because a few months later, he was sick.
Did you talk to him once he was sick?
No, I didn't get a chance to talk to him after that. You know, once I found out he was sick, went down to the hospital, saw Dre there. Dre was just coming out. He was like, you know, he's not conscious right now. So
N.W.A. rewrote the rules of hip hop, but their story is a warning. When loyalty becomes a contract and family turns into business, problems are almost always on the way. Although
time is precious and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Sadly enough, this isn't the only time in hip-hop money led to betrayal between brothers. And this next example, many consider even more disturbing. Before the lawsuits, the tweets, and the years of silence, Lil Wayne and Birdman were inseparable. Wayne wasn't just signed to Birdman Cash Money Records like a regular artist, he was raised by it. After losing his biological father at a young age, Wayne looked to Birdman as family.
And so when I first met him, he became like my son. Like, you know, in New Orleans, we don't have fathers a lot. A lot of parents get killed. A lot of parents don't be in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Wayne ended up joining Cash Money at just 11 years old. By 14, he was in the Hot Boys alongside Juvenile, BG, and Turk, a New Orleans supergroup that helped Cash Money break through nationally. But while the other members came and went, Wayne stayed. And he didn't just stay, he carried the label. From 2004 to 2011, Lil Wayne had one of the greatest mixtape and album runs in hip-hop history. The Carter Series, Dedication, The Drought, and Birdman, he was right there with him, co-signing every step, counting money in the background, and calling Wayne the best rapper alive. In 2009, Lil Wayne started the label Young Money and signed new artists that you might have heard of in Drake and Nicki Minaj. They quickly rose to fame, helping the label grow even bigger. Although, what Wayne began to realize next changed his family forever. Behind the scenes, the money was complicated. Even though Wayne discovered and helped to build Drake's career, Birdman had set things up so that he controlled most of the money and the business calls. Wayne began to realize that while he built the brand and found the talent, he truly didn't own what he created. The final straw came when Birdman delayed the release of the Carter 5. Wayne filed a $51 million lawsuit, not just for the album, but for the years of loyalty and money lost in contracts that left him out. But that wasn't all. Wayne's tour bus ended up being shot up in Atlanta after a show. Thankfully, no one was hurt, but investigators eventually tied the incident to an affiliate of Young Thug, who had been feuding with Wayne at the time.
Winfrey will spend 10 years in prison for the April incident on I-285. Two buses belonging to the entourage for rapper Lil Wayne came under gunfire. Prosecutors say a simmering rap feud and gang tensions led to it.
Prosecutors even went as far as suggesting Birdman may have had indirect knowledge of the incident, but he denied any involvement and was never charged. Although surprisingly enough, the two would appear on and off at clubs together after everything that happened, making things pretty confusing and having people wonder if they were back to being friends. But in 2018, the confusion would officially go away.
Most of us probably weren't sure we'd ever see this day, but reports seem to indicate Lil Wayne's long-standing legal battle with Baby and Cash Money Records is finally drawing to a close.
Want
to
try a free sample?
Oh yeah, I do. Wait, can something this small throw my body off balance?
Time to consult the online experts.
One bite will destroy your metabolism. Drink butter coffee instead to kill cravings.
Sensitivity.
Stop it!
They don't know your body. Only you do. Signos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. Signos.
Wayne finally settled the lawsuit, receiving a multi-million dollar payout and full control over Young Money. More importantly, he was able to release the Carter 5, the album Birdman had held back for so long. In 2018, Birdman actually apologized to Wayne on stage in Miami.
I knew this day was gonna come, but I ain't know when it was gonna come. But this nigga right here, the best nigga, the realest nigga, the illest nigga, and I wanted to apologize to my nigga worldwide.
But even with making up, the damage was still done. To Wayne, it seemed like the betrayal wasn't just about paid money. It was about lost time and watching the man he once called a father turn his back on him when it mattered most. For hip hop, it was one of the most painful splits ever seen. Not just because of how close they were, but because of what they built together. Without Lil Wayne, Cash Money doesn't survive the 2000s. Without Birdman, Wayne doesn't get the platform to become a legend. Although if there's one lesson this story left behind, it's definitely this. Loyalty can build you anything. But betrayal, it can tear it down even faster. But in hip-hop, betrayal is extremely common, always coming from people you never expect. That's why when this next incident took place, it had the entire world scared and ended up changing hip-hop forever.
If you're gonna act like you a gangster or a G or the king of New York, I'm expect that. When you don't come through, then I'm gonna crush your empire. And that's what it's time for.
Before the East vs. West Coast War, the diss tracks, or the deadly rumors, Tupac and Biggie were actually friends. But there was something very unique about their friendship. They had complete opposite energies. Biggie was Brooklyn calm, Pac was West Coast fire. Although, their friendship continued. They ate together, hung out, and Biggie even asked Tupac to be his manager once. But on November 30th, 1994, everything changed forever.
Tupac Shakur is recovering from 5 gunshot wounds. The rapper found himself in the line of fire last night on a New York City street.
Tupac was shot 5 times in the lobby of Quad Studios in New York, the same building where Biggie and his crew happened to be recording upstairs. Pac ended up surviving the attempt on his life, but the damage was done. He believed Biggie and his manager Puffy knew something about it.
Half of the major New York rappers, or they managers, or they agents, or they somebody, was there when I got shot, and nobody could give me no information.
A week before I got shot, he knew the nigga that was shot me, and he was like, Pop, don't hang around this nigga, you don't need no harm. We walked in with the nigga that shot, that ended up shooting me. He was like, Pop, don't fuck with this nigga, because I knew the nigga too, he was my coach there. And I was like, what you mean? He's like, I'll talk to you about it later, and we didn't talk. Next time I saw was at the studio where I got shot. So I knew he knew what happened. Mm-hmm. So I was like, Biggie, what happened? He kept sending me messages, I'ma come see. No, nigga, what happened? While I'm in jail, strangers is telling me, yo, you don't know? Biggie homeboy shot you.
But whether they did or not didn't matter. What mattered was that Tupac felt...
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Betrayed, and he wanted the world to know it. While he was recovering, Biggie ended up dropping some song that we would come to know as Who Shot Ya, and what a song it turned out to be.
Who shot ya? Separate the weak from the opsa. Leap hard to creep them Brooklyn streets.
The track wasn't directly aimed at Pac, according to Biggie, but of course, the timing was pretty interesting. Pac saw it as a diss towards him and a mockery of everything he went through. From that moment on, the brotherhood turned into a battle. But before Pac could fully recover from the shooting, he was already facing another battle, an SA case dating back to 1993. So just days after being shot, he was wheeled into a courtroom and found guilty of first degree SA. 2 months later, in February of 1995, he was sentenced to up to 4.5 years in prison. From his cell, he watched the industry completely move on without him. Biggie was blowing up with Ready to Die, dominating the charts, and Who Shot Ya was now out in the streets and stirring rumors. Sitting behind bars, Pac felt isolated and betrayed, but that pain ended up becoming fuel. Suge Knight and Death Row ended up posting Pac's $1.4 million bail in October of 1995. And when he got out, it wasn't just to make music, he was coming back for revenge. He recorded Hit 'Em Up, one of the most vicious diss tracks in rap history. Pac claimed he slept with Biggie's wife, called out Bad Boy, and declared war on the entire East Coast.
You claim to be a player, but I f***ed your wife. We bust some bad boys, niggas for life.
Biggie stayed quietly publicly for the most part. He insisted he had nothing to do with the shooting. But by then, the streets had picked sides and media fueled the fire. Death Row vs. Bad Boy wasn't just a label. It became a cultural divide. Rappers, fans, and entire cities were pulled into it. And the cost ended up being blood.
Rap star Tupac Shakur died last night after a brief life in a rough business. He was 25.
On September 13th, 1996, Tupac was killed in a drive-by shooting in Las Vegas, Nevada. 6 months later, on March 9th, 1997, Biggie was gunned down in LA.
Both communities are mourning the death of the rapper known as Notorious B.I.G.
He was only 24 years old, was just starting what was expected to be a promising career in music, but tonight, it's only what could have been.
To this day, there's debate about what really happened that night at Quad Studios, whether Biggie had anything to do with it, whether Pac overreacted, or saw something others ignored. But one thing is clear, what started as a brotherhood ended up in betrayal. Realer perceived that changed hip-hop forever. Their deaths left a permanent scar on the culture. Two of the greatest to ever touch the mic, gone just like that. And that's why when this next hip-hop betrayal took place between two young promising artists just years later, it had the entire game extremely worried.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
But I'm a rapper. He's a rapper, and I am the better rapper because 50 can't rap.
When you see Game, do you say, yo, why are you talking about 50? You wouldn't even be here if it wasn't for him.
50 Cent's rap group G-Unit began as a small mixtape crew out of Queens, New York in the early 2000s. The original trio was 50 Cent, Lloyd Banks, and Tony Ayo. After 50 signed with Shady Aftermath under Eminem and Dr. Dre, he brought G-Unit with him into the mainstream, and this changed their future forever. In 2003, while Tony Ayo was serving time in prison, 50 added Young Buck from Nashville, Tennessee. That same year, they dropped their debut album Beg for Mercy, which went multi-platinum. G-Unit wasn't only dominating the charts, but the buzz on the street as well. Then came The Game, a Compton rapper Dr. Dre had been mentoring and building up. 50 and G-Unit were brought in to help develop his sound and build momentum for the West Coast. And while the group already had great talent, the Game stood out not only as talented, but unpredictable. As G-Unit and Dr. Dre helped shape Game's debut album, The Documentary, 50 Cent played a massive role. He wrote or co-wrote several of the album's biggest songs, including How We Do and Hit It or Love It. It's even been said that those tracks were originally meant for 50's own album, The Massacre, but he gave them to Game to make sure his debut would be a success. And the success is exactly what it was. The Documentary sold over 5 million copies and turned Game into a superstar. But behind the scenes, tensions were building fast. While 50 was beefing with Nas, Fat Joe, and Jadakiss, he expected G-Unit to stand with him, just like he had supported all of them. But this is where things ended up changing forever.
Yeah, with me and 50, we never talked about his beats and who we didn't like. He never gave us the G-Unit handbook right. And said, these niggas.
The Game refused to stay loyal to 50. He didn't even just stay neutral. He made it known publicly he respected those artists that 50 was beefing with and was open to working with them.
So I told Flex, I don't know what 50 on. I don't know what he on. But I love Nas, and Kiss just picked me up. And Joe, that's my man.
To 50, that wasn't just a disagreement. It was a betrayal. After all the investment, songwriting, co-signs, and platform 50 had given him, Game was openly siding with the enemies. The final straw came in February of 2005 during a live interview on Hot 97. 50 announced that the Game was officially out of G-Unit.
It's incredible that he would come back and forget how much work, how much I've done for him. You know, personally, you know what I'm saying?
So where does he stand as far as G-Unit is concerned right now?
Across the street or around the corner. He's not in my camp.
Not at all?
No way.
Okay.
Not after being that disrespectful.
50 heard that where he was at. He ain't like that. So the next thing I get, I'm kicked out the group. Well, guess what? You don't kick me out of group. I'm the G and G unit. So I felt the way.
Not too long.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Later, chaos erupted outside of the radio station. One of Game's associates was shot in the leg during a standoff between the two entourages at the building.
There was a riff. We had a shootout in New York in front of a radio station. It was a little bit more than a riff.
Why?
Egos, young, dumb, ignorant, who knows?
Who drew first?
The Game.
You drew first?
Yeah.
The Game.
From that point on, the beef was forever. Diss tracks flew back and forth with Piggy Bank, 300 Bars and Running, Not Rich, Still Lying, and more. Game even launched a campaign called GU Not, mocking the crew and accusing 50 of exploiting his artists.
And I got love for New York, but I ain't no motherfucking punk, and I ain't nobody's soldier, and I don't follow suit. 50 shit, man, 50 shit. GU Not.
So when we look back at it, what began as a potential duo and friend for life turned into one of the ugliest and most high-profile feuds in rap history. But despite all of this, the irony is that 50 wanted the Game to succeed, but Game, he didn't want to be a soldier. He wanted to be the general.
I definitely wanted to like just be a solo artist and like get to it, you know what I'm saying?
Fast forward years later, while Game carved out a strong solo career, he never reached the same level of success he had under 50's guidance, and 50 Cent will always feel betrayed by an artist he did so much for. But the craziest part about the Game is 50 isn't the only person who changed his life forever and then was betrayed for it. And depending on who you ask, this next situation is even more ungrateful.
It's crazy that Ye did more for me in the last 2 weeks than Dre did for me my whole career. It's what it is.
Before the Game ever stood next to 50 Cent, there was Dr. Dre. Dre saw potential in the young Compton rapper when others wouldn't touch him. He was considered rough around the edges, hard to manage, and surrounded by street drama. But Dre, he saw through the noise. He signed Game to Aftermath Entertainment around 2003 and began shaping him into the next West Coast torchbearer. Dre gave him what most rappers dream of, top-tier production, studio access, and co-signs from legends. But even with all of that, there was still something missing, his buzz. Dre made a call to 50 Cent, who, as we know, was dominating the industry at the time. He pitched the idea of bringing Game into G-Unit and convinced 50 it was the right call. The result ended up being an album called The Documentary that would become a classic. Not only did 50 help him with the hit songs, Dre gave him beats like Start From Scratch and West Side Story. But after the Game and 50 fell out, Dr. Dre was caught in the middle.
Yeah,
he's my mentor.
Sometimes Dre pissed me off, man. And sometimes I pissed Dre off. But that's one of the things Dre told me a long time ago, about eight, nine years ago. He told me, Game, me and you are always going to be the way that we left off. Whatever happens in between, all of that. If we left on good terms, that's how we're going to be. If the last time I seen you, we was like each other, the next time I see you, it's going to be like each other until we fix it. So that's our thing, man. And I got nothing but love for Dre, man. Everything that he did for me, I'm very appreciative.
But years later, the Game's appreciation for Dr. Dre vanished and changed their relationship forever. In 2022, when Dre headlined the Super Bowl halftime show, the Game was noticeably absent.
The real reason I wasn't on the Super Bowl is because I'm not a safe artist. You don't know what Game gonna do when he get up there. LA, all around the Super Bowl, and I don't get the call. So
how'd you feel?
I was hurt by that.
Thank you.
You know what I'm saying? Snoop was like, you know, cuz, if it was my Super Bowl, cuz, we'd have been in that. You know, I feel like Dre should have called and said, why? I would understand that.
Feeling sidelined, Game went on to Drink Champs and let out his feelings.
It's crazy that Ye did more for me in the last 2 weeks than Dre did for me my whole career. It's what it is.
That public diss showed just how ungrateful Game was and how far from friends they had become. The man who helped launch Game's career was now just a distant figure. The Game's disloyalty wasn't just a personal betrayal. It made noise throughout the industry.
And Game, no disrespect for him, I remember he was in a little studio and Dre and them niggas and 50 and them gave him assists. So you can't say, Kanye did more for me. Game, you mad over the Super Bowl. Just be easy. Let's get the money. Just chill.
I mean, that's
they
what
didn't
it looked
want
like.
You there.
That's what it looked like.
It's cool.
In the end, this stands as one of hip hop's most sad stories. No matter how much you can do for someone, including completely changing their lives forever, people will still find a way to be ungrateful for what you did for them and just have the greed for more. But the sad part about the hip-hop industry is that sometimes it's not just the mentee betraying the mentor. Sometimes the person you look up to the most can hurt you the worst.
Drake is the greatest rapper ever. And I don't apologize about it.
He can tell whoever, you know, I got love for him and whatever, but it's not love, you know. There's something there that bothers him deeply.
You know, everybody is very, very excited about the elimination of Drake.
For Drake, Kanye was a creative hero and someone he'd grown up idolizing. For Kanye, Drake was the biggest rapper in the world and someone worth working with than against. Drake has always wanted to be the best rapper in the game. And if we're being honest, Kanye started to feel a certain type of way about it as Drake got older. In 2011, on DJ Khaled's song I'm On One, Drake said that the throne is for the taking.
I'm just feeling like the throne is for the taking. Watch me take
all I care.
The following year, Kanye West and Jay-Z made an album called Watch the Throne, which Kanye later admitted Drake inspired as he was applying pressure.
Me and Ho would have never made Watch the Throne, but this nigga wanna put a pressure on us like that.
And with that pressure continuing to rise as the years passed, Kanye's responses rose as well. In 2017, when Drake's run was really in motion, he had a very popular song on the radio called For Free. And Kanye, well, he was sick of it.
Is it just me? Or did you hear that song so many times? You say you wanna pay for free.
If I'm Ye, do I feel a little resentment that this motherfucker is doing everything that I created a little bit better than me and is getting more success than me at it, that would probably lead to why I'm having a breakdown on the Yeezus tour from like last year, whatever it's called. And I'm ranting about why I gotta hear Drake all the time. I love Drake, but why this nigga got music gotta be, again.
Well,
I'm just connecting.
I like
public
the theory act. I like.
And to be fair, Kanye has always supported Drake. But as Drake kept growing in his career, he learned that some of your friends want to see you do good, but maybe not better than them. But Drake was in for a surprise, as he was about to learn just how much tension there really was between him and Kanye. In 2018, Ye made a decision that would change things forever. Drake went to Kanye West's ranch in Wyoming to ask for help on his new album. But when he got there, he discovered Kanye was also working on music. Drake ended up helping Kanye more than Kanye helped him. But there was a catch. Drake didn't mind doing this, because Kanye had given him a beat to take home with him. and this beat was one Drake absolutely loved and made it feel all worth it.
He played me like this.
He played you a beat, right?
He played me Lift Yourself, and he was like, yo, you can have this if you want. And I was hype. I started writing to it. And so I went and, you know, ended up pretty much spending majority of my time working on his music, like just trying to like cook up ideas for him, you know? And again, I left Wyoming and I was like, okay, well, we left with Lift Yourself and like a pat on the back, you know, so I was like, all right.
It's all good.
But as time went on, Kanye randomly released a song and used that exact same beat, and it went a little like this.
Scoop, scoop dee dee whoop, whoop dee scoop dee poop.
Lift Yourself comes out with him just talking nonsense. This guy's trolling me. This was like a manipulative, like, I want to break you thing. So I said, all right, I'm gonna go back to distancing myself again. I know what this is.
If you're Drake, you're feeling that your friend and mentor who you trusted just betrayed you. And unfortunately for Drake, this feeling of betrayal was only going to become more real as time went on.
He can tell whoever, you know, I got love for him and whatever, but it's not love, you know. There's something there that bothers him deeply.
Drake allegedly spoke to Kanye at the ranch about personal things, including the fact that he had a son, a detail not yet public. But just weeks later, that trust was shattered. Pusha T, one of Kanye's closest friends on Good Music, dropped the story of Adidon, and we all probably know how much that changed things. Pusha and Drake's issues briefly began when Pusha had some bars for Drake on the song called Infrared, where he was dissing him about ghostwriting.
How could you ever write these wrongs when you don't even write your songs? But let us all play along. We all know what niggas for real been waiting on. Push.
Drake, who isn't afraid of dropping a diss track, released Duppy Freestyle, where he says that it's funny Pusha T is dissing him about his ghostwriting, as Drake has written a lot of songs for Kanye.
I've done things for him I thought that he never would need. Father had to stretch his hands out and get it from me.
But what tipped Pusha T over the edge was Drake making a reference to his fiance Virginia Williams.
I told you keep playing with my name and I'ma let it ring on you like Virginia Williams.
Listen, I was going to go, period.
Regardless.
But the fact that you put that wife line in it, like, it just made it great for me. It's a blackout.
Although, this turned out to be one of Drake's biggest mistakes. Pusha's diss track, The Story of Adidon, wasn't just a diss track, it was groundbreaking. The song exposed that Drake had a secret son, taunted him over his family life, and questioned his integrity. The world went absolutely nuts. To Drake, this wasn't a normal rap beef, and in his eyes, the only way Pusha could have gotten that information was through Kanye West.
Through. By the way, I'm in Wyoming, I play him March 14th, I send him a picture of my son.
Oh my God.
I tell him I'm having trouble with my son's mother. We had a conversation, I shared my...
I spoke to Drake this morning, okay? First question I asked him, I said, tell me what I'm hearing isn't true. Pusha T did not get, like, a lowdown on you because you were in Wyoming and you played the song where you eventually plan to announce to the world your son. He only confirmed to me that he played music for Ye before Pusha's disc came out, and he would have had the information to convey to Pusha that Pusha could put it in the story of Adidon.
The timeline made it look suspicious. Drake shares a personal secret with Kanye in Wyoming, and suddenly, Kanye's artist is using it against him in a diss track. Kanye ended up denying it, claiming he never told Pusha.
Now I told you, I didn't tell Pusha no information about your baby mama, nothing like that. That didn't come from me.
And later on, Pusha said that the information came from someone else entirely, Drake's own producer, Noah 40 Shabib.
The information came from 40. It didn't come from Kanye. 40 is sleeping with a woman. He talks to her daily, 5-6 hours a day. With that also came the fact that Drake has a child. She divulged this information.
Although, very recently in 2025, alleged text messages leaked showing Pusha T apologizing for bringing Kanye into the Drake beef in 2018. So it definitely makes you wonder. But either way, the damage was done. Drake's trust was completely gone with Kanye. And although their relationship was never the same, the two have been on and off friends again since 2018. But Ye publicly joined Team Kendrick in the 2024 hip-hop battle that had Drake versus almost everyone.
You know, everybody was very, very excited about the elimination of Drake.
Just another betrayal by Kanye towards Drake, and probably one that will never be forgiven. This beef definitely changed Drake forever. The idea that a friend and mentor could just turn into a source of betrayal is something that would hurt anyone. Yet for Drake, it's just another person on a long list who he probably feels turned his back on him. But the crazy thing is, Drake isn't the only person in hip-hop who felt betrayed by someone they were close with. And this next example has aged so poorly, one of the men is a billionaire and the other is bankrupt.
Like every time I could have made a really big check, he's always stepped in and intentionally f***ed it up. Every time.
In the mid-90s, Jay-Z and Dame Dash weren't just business partners, they were brothers chasing the same dream. Alongside Kareem Biggs Burke, they founded Rockefeller Records in 1995, betting on themselves when no major label would take them seriously. Dame was the loud, fearless hustler who fought for Jay at every turn, while Jay was the quiet, calculated lyricist building his legacy. Together, they turned Rockefeller into a powerhouse. Reasonable Doubt, Hard Knock Life, and The Rock Chain became symbols of success. To the public, they were inseparable. But behind the scenes, cracks started to form. Dame's aggressive, no-nonsense style made him a hero to artists, but a nightmare for corporate executives.
Y'all should have called Damon Dash and said, and you want the whole thing to hear it? Keep the door open, I don't give a
He'd publicly confront label heads, openly call out industry politics, and refuse to play by the unwritten rules of the music business. Jay, meanwhile, was thinking long term. He wanted to expand into new ventures, build relationships with the same people Dame was annoying, and turn himself into a mogul on a global scale. To Jay, Dame was starting to look like a real liability. But the real turning point came in 2004. Rockefeller's distribution partner Def Jam offered Jay a powerful role as a president of the label. The position would give him influence far beyond Rockefeller, but it also came with an unspoken condition. Jay would need to separate himself from Dame. It was a choice between preserving their brotherhood or stepping into a new level of power. Jay chose power. Soon after, Jay made a move that shocked the industry. He made a deal that effectively bought Dame out of Rockefeller, splitting the label's assets. Jay kept the Rockefeller name, the most successful artists, including Kanye West, and the corporate backing of Def Jam. Dame was left with fewer resources and was forced to start from scratch. Instead of sharing the power, it was now just Jay at the top. And Dame, he lost out of millions of dollars by Jay making this side deal behind his back. Although, this wasn't the last time Dame felt betrayed. Back in 1999, they created Rockaware, a fashion line worth millions. But with Jay now being in charge and Dame having a strict stance against having a boss,
there's no money in this world for someone to pay me so they could call me, so I could call them a boss. That's like calling somebody daddy.
Dame left Rockefeller to start his own label, Dame Dash Music Group, which unfortunately failed after 2 years. So to try and dissolve himself of Jay for good, he decided to sell his stake in Rockaware for $22 million. But just 2 years later, Jay sold Rockaware for $204 million, leaving Dame out of nearly $30 million.
So now it's going down and I'm arguing with them and I'm like, yo, sell my interest, man. I just want to go. Soon as I leave, then Jay comes back and he's like, now I'm involved every day. And then they did whatever they did and sold the company without me. You understand what I'm saying? Like, then it got sold. I sold my piece first because I wanted to get I tried to sell it. We tried to sell it. He said, I'm not going to be a part of it. So at that point, I'm like, yo, every time we try to sell it, why the f*** you keep doing that? Obviously, you don't want me to get no money. So I'm like, let me get away from it. Bottom line is, Rockaware was my idea. Yeah. I approved. It was my baby. Rockefeller was my idea. It was my baby.
For Dame, these weren't just business calls. They were personal betrayals. He had fought for Jay when no one else believed in him, had shielded him from bad deals, and had helped build the Rockefeller empire brick by brick. In Dame's eyes, Jay had traded the loyalty for a front seat at the corporate table. The breakup shocked everyone in hip-hop. Fans looked at Jay and Dame as proof that friendship and loyalty could survive the cutthroat music industry, but their breakup was a strong reminder of how quickly those bonds can break when money, ambition, and control are on the line. But when we look at it almost 2 decades later, they still haven't made up. Jay is as rich as ever, and Dame is sadly as broke as he's ever been. He's repeatedly accused Jay of selling out and abandoning the culture for corporate success, while Jay has largely stayed silent, letting his billionaire empire speak for itself. Their story remains one of hip-hop's most infamous examples of how brotherhood built on trust can shatter the moment business gets in the way. But when we look back at the biggest betrayals in hip-hop, it shows that loyalty and success don't always go hand in hand. Friends can become rivals, partners can turn into opponents, and the people you trusted the most can become the worst thing you never saw coming. Although if there's one thing to remember, it's this. In life, and especially hip-hop, loyalty is rare. Once it's lost, the consequences last a lifetime.